Chemical Watch Podcast.
Unlock the full value of your compliance and product stewardship with world-leading insight and intelligence from Chemical Watch. To find out more or request a demo, visit chemicalwatch.com. Chemical Watch. Intelligence to transform product safety.
Hello, this is Kate Lowe, Global Managing Editor of Chemical Watch, welcoming you to the first of two special editions of the news podcast hosted by members of the Chemical Watch News and Insight team. We're here to take you a little further behind the headlines and provide you with fresh insight into the big developments taking place in the world of chemicals management. And for today's episode, I'm joined by our Managing Editor for Europe, Lee Stringer, Asia Desk Editor, David McFarlane, and Science Editor, Andrew Turley. Now, we'll be taking a look at some of the big themes from this year's Global Outlook series of articles, which examine in depth the policy and regulatory developments likely to affect chemicals management over the next 12 months. We will begin with the European Commission, which is forging ahead with actions set out under its Chemical Strategy for Sustainability, which aims to move Europe towards a toxic-free environment. That will be followed by a look at a selection of key jurisdictions in Asia and the main provisions of new and upcoming chemical laws expected this year. And finally, we'll take a look at some of the big scientific questions which could shape developments in chemicals management in 2022. So, turning first to Europe, where the European Commission is forging ahead with actions set out under its Chemical Strategy for Sustainability, published in October 2020. Since its release, debate has been rife over the plans and concepts that aim to transition Europe towards a toxic-free environment, one of the pillars of the bloc's Green Deal. And while there are many unknowns and concepts still to be defined, the strategy sets a tight deadline to adopt many important changes to the way chemicals are managed across the EU in the next few years, some of which come as early as this year. So what can we expect to come out of the strategy in 2022, and who will be most affected by these announcements? Now, one of the most hotly anticipated developments this year is the plan to revise the REACH and CLP regulations. So, Lee, could you start by telling us what we should expect this year from the REACH revision process?
Yes, thanks, Kate. So the first thing to note is the Commission's current public consultation on the revision. And the deadline for submitting comments here is the 15th of April. So anyone wanting to have their views heard, this is your chance. And the measures being considered by the Commission are quite extensive. I'll go through them. Revision of registration requirements, so it's analysing options, including increased information on hazards of concern, documentation of safe use, registration of certain polymers, which is an important one, and information on the environmental footprint. It's looking at simplifying communication in supply chains, and here officials are assessing ways to improve safety data sheets, and part of that includes possibly adding in harmonised electronic formats. Revising provisions for dossier and substance evaluation, and options here include the possibility to revoke registration numbers for non-compliant registrations and to allow authorities to commission tests to obtain hazard information. Revising enforcement provisions, and enforcement is quite a big aspect of the chemical strategy. And the Commission here is considering establishing minimum requirements for national controls and enforcement, including stricter border controls, as well as establishing an audit of member state enforcement. And finally, something that Andrew, I know, will talk about a little bit later on, is the introduction of a mixtures assessment factor, which is something that several industry groups, many of which are representing downstream users of chemicals, have opposed quite strongly. So some significant changes on the horizon. And in addition to these, you have the Commission's pledge to revise the REACH authorisation process. And here there are three proposed options: keeping the authorisation process with clarifications and simplifications, merging authorisations and restrictions, or removing the authorisation process entirely from REACH. which is, it seems to be that this is the least favourable option. And then, of course, you have the restriction process, which is also being looked at, and options here include extending the generic risk approach to restrictions to endocrine disruptors, PBTs, VP-VB substances, immunotoxicants, neurotoxicants, respiratory sensitizers, and substances that affect specific organs. It's also planning, looking at extending the generic risk approach to products marketed for professional use, and as well putting the concept of essential use in restrictions into operation, which includes criteria for granting derogations. And it's this last point on essential use that's been very contentious recently, with a lot of debate around how the concept will be developed and implemented. And in fact, only yesterday the Commission held a workshop to discuss the idea, and actually more than 500 participants attended, with numerous questions asked, which gives you some idea of the interest here on the concept. And the criteria is set to be completed by the end of the year, so keep your eye on what's going on there. As for the overall timeline for the revision, following the public consultation, there'll be an impact assessment, which is expected to be completed by September, with the Commission setting out a final proposal by the end of the year. In the run-up to that, the Commission's tasked a consultancy with conducting the impact assessment on the plans, and it's holding stakeholder workshops on the 21st of March, so in the next few weeks, and in June, as well as some targeted stakeholder consultations that kicks off this month.
Great. Thank you very much, Lee. That was a great overview. And so what about the CLP regulation? How might that be revised?
Yeah, so similar things happening here. Lots of big changes planned if the strategy objectives go ahead. And the Commission's considering here introducing new hazard classes, such as endocrine disruption and corresponding criteria. A new obligation to provide information on some hazards on the label for products currently outside the scope of CLP. Clarifying obligations to classify mixtures and some complex substances. Introducing the possibility to submit proposals and set harmonised environmental and safety values for some substances. Requiring importers and downstream users to provide information on substances classified for physical effects or health hazards to poison centres. And clarify obligations for distributors to submit such information through an only representative or maybe other means. Introducing a mandate for the Commission to request ECHA to develop new harmonised classification and labelling dossiers. Introducing tailored labelling rules where there's not enough space on packaging. And the onset of a prioritisation mechanism for harmonising the classification of certain chemicals. So quite a lot there. And there's been a lot of discussion and debate about the Commission's plans to propose new hazard classes and criteria in the regulation, which are to fully address environmental toxicity, persistence, mobility, and bioaccumulation. And the move's been basically welcomed by many stakeholders. Some industry groups have raised concerns. And actually, in December, we reported on CEFIC's report, which said plans to add hazard classes to the CLP regulation, as well as extend the generic risk approach under the strategy, could result in a net loss of at least 12% of the European chemical industry portfolio by 2040. So some serious concern from industry. The trade body commissioned study that ran from February to October. It concluded that about 12,000 substances could potentially be in scope of the CLP and GRA proposals. However, we heard just last week from a European Commission official that the plans are likely to result in a significantly lower impact on the chemical industry than what CEFIC predicts. And actually, some NGOs have said that the study actually acknowledges that these substances, which the study said are present in 74% of consumer or professional products, potentially have one or more hazardous properties of serious concern and should rightly be regulated. They've actually said a 12% loss is actually quite good news, quotes, considering the substantial and increasing turnover of the industry. And in terms of the timelines for the revision of CLP, we had a public consultation that ended in November last year, and an impact assessment is due this spring, with the Commission presenting a final proposal in the second half of the year.
Okay, thank you again, Lee. That's a great overview again. So finally, another really hot topic is PFAS. So can you tell us a little about the Commission's plans for per and polyfluoroalkyl substances and what developments we can expect this year on that front?
Yeah, well, we've actually had some very recent update here. It's just last week that the five European countries, Denmark, Germany, Norway, Sweden, and the Netherlands, who are planning to submit their joint broad PFAS restriction proposal, they've actually pushed back their submission deadline to January next year. It was originally set for July this year. And they've done this because of the extensive amount of data and studies being collected and provided on the substance group, which is obviously going to take more time to review and consider. And I think that sums up quite well the complexity and ambition of the proposal, because it's covering thousands of substances used in an even larger number of applications. Now, of course, it's worth noting that not all are necessarily circulating through the market, but the authorities are wanting to take strong action because, and I'm quoting from the five countries submission notification to ECHA, that without taking action, PFAS concentrations will continue to increase and they're toxic and polluting effects will be difficult to reverse. Once the proposal is submitted, it will then move to ECHA's scientific committees for opinion making, and then the agency expects the restriction to enter into force in 2025. Now, while all that's going on, action is being taken on certain PFAS and PFAS applications. For example, ECHA submitted in January a restriction proposal for PFAS is used in firefighting foams, and a consultation on this is open until 23rd of September. It's worth noting that the reason for this proposal is that the use is not included in the wider PFAS restriction being prepared by the five European countries. In addition, there's a restriction on PFCAs, which is a subgroup of PFAS, which is going to kick in January next year. So important to keep an eye on these developments, and even more so if you produce or use PFASs.
Great. Thank you again, Lee. Plenty to keep us all busy there. So turning now to Asia, where we expect to see significant activity continue across many jurisdictions this year with regard to both new and upcoming chemical laws and other developments. Now, they include China's draft action plan for managing new pollutants, additional requirements relating to China's new overarching cosmetics law, a key compliance deadline for companies operating in Japan with standards on chemical classification, labelling and safety data sheets, and an update of India's overarching chemicals management law. Let's hone in on two or three of these, starting with China's draft action plan for managing new pollutants. So, David, could you just start by telling us a bit more about the action plan and the developments we're likely to see this year?
Sure, Kate. So China's Ministry of Ecology and Environment, or the MEE, unveiled its draft action plan for managing new pollutants last October. And this is a subject that is expected to continue to be high on the agenda this year because it will drive the evolution of the Chinese chemical regulatory system. The draft action plan, which is expected to be finalised early this year, lays out the MEE's plans for chemical substance management. This includes new regulations, guidelines, restrictions, and bans on priority chemicals by 2025. The MEE also proposes the assessment of 5 to 10 priority substances a year and will publish its assessment plan, including the substances it proposes to assess before the end of this year. The action plan is expected to affect multiple industries. As an important part of the action plan, the MEE will continue working towards finalising a new regulation for the environmental risk control of toxic and hazardous chemicals substances, which was originally called ERAC during 2022. This will cover the country's overarching chemical framework, covering both new and existing substances. And under the draft action plan, the MEE published guidelines for the screening of priority assessment chemical substances, or PACs, in the last week of December, which entered into force on the 1st of January. A draft of the guidelines was published last May. The MEE also plans to publish the first list of PACs and the new technical guidelines for hazard and exposure assessment this year. Industry will have to pay particular attention to this list because the government will conduct environmental risk assessments on the substances, which may subsequently lead to restrictions or bans.
Okay, thanks very much for that, David. So what about the new overarching cosmetics law, the Cosmetics Supervision and Administration Regulation, or CSA, which came into force last year? Can you also tell us a little bit about the additional requirements taking effect in 2022?
Yes, Kate. As additional requirements take effect under the Cosmetics Supervision and Administration Regulation, or CSAR, it will be another busy year for companies that place cosmetic products on the Chinese market. The following measures published in 2021 to support the implementation of CSAR will apply this year. So I'll just list them. The measures for the supervision and administration of cosmetics production and business operation, which will come into force from January the 1st, 2022. The administrative measures for registering and filing cosmetics, which came into force in January, and the administrative measures on cosmetics labelling, which will come into force in May this year. From the 1st of January, companies that file or register cosmetics products must submit the safety information of functional ingredients, such as preservatives and sunscreen agents, to the NMPA. They must provide a product safety assessment report prepared in accordance with the Product Safety Technical Guideline, which was published in 2021. For cosmetic products registered or filed before the 1st of May last year, applicants must update their registrations or filing documents and update product classification codes in accordance with the new rules on classification by the 1st of May. Under the Cosmetic Efficacy Claim Assessment Guidelines, companies must evaluate the claims made on labels and upload the summary of data supporting these claims to the NMPA's website by the following dates. So it was the 1st of January for new cosmetic registrations or filings, the 1st of May 2023 for cosmetics products registered or filed before the 1st of May 2021, and the 1st of May 2022 for cosmetic products registered or filed between 1st of May 2021 and the 1st of January 2022. Separately, starting from May this year, new cosmetic products intended for children under 12 years old placed on the Chinese market must bear a special mark accompanied by a warning statement saying shall be used under adult guidance. For children's cosmetics already registered or filed, existing product labels must be updated before the 1st of May 2023. Finally, the sale of existing stock of cosmetic products containing microplastics will be prohibited from the 31st of December this year.
Okay, thank you very much, David. That's another great overview. So finally, could you just tell us more about the changes taking place in Japan regarding chemical classification and labelling?
Certainly, Kate. Industry will need to keep a close eye on whether the Industrial Safety and Health Act, or ISHA, is going to be amended to require mandatory safety data sheets and labelling for all chemical substances classified as hazardous under the GHS system of classification and labelling of chemicals. ISHA is the main law that implements the GHS, which obliges companies in Japan to provide SDSs and labels. Last July, the Ministry of Health, Labour and Welfare, the MHLW, published a study group report which proposes developing mandatory chemical risk management measures based on the 6th revised edition of the GHS. It proposes that the number of substances required to issue SDSs will be expanded to approximately 2,900. For the first 3 years, from financial year 2021 to financial year 2023, the ministry will include 1,800 substances for mandatory SDS and GHS-based labelling, and the remaining will be implemented in the subsequent years. Currently, about 700 substances a year are subject to mandatory SDS document and labelling requirements. Under the proposed measures, the ministry would also set exposure threshold limits for about 150 GHS classified substances in financial year 2022, and from 2023 financial year onwards, in the region of 200 substances per year. In addition, the report recommends measures to strengthen the transmission of hazard information, workplace safety mandatory measures, and proposes exploring the feasibility of setting up a national certification scheme for chemical substance specialists. And recently, well, just this week, we reported on how the MHLW has proposed introducing new mandatory measures and setting enforcement dates to improve chemical risk assessments and workplace safety under ISHA. And these proposals are all based on the aforementioned July 21, 2021 report, which was actually entitled How to Manage Chemicals in the Workplace. Published on the 17th of February, the draft ministerial ordinance for the partial revision of occupational health and safety regulations will be open for public consultation until the 18th of March.
Okay, thank you again, David. So let's turn now to the scientific questions, which are shaping developments in chemicals management in 2022. They include uptake of non-animal test methods, which is a key focus across the globe this year. The EU's partnership for the assessment of risks from chemicals, which is due to launch in April. A proposal to establish an intergovernmental chemicals panel, and the results of research into the proposed implementation in REACH of a mixtures assessment factor. So, Andrew, let's start, shall we, with non-animal test methods, where there are a number of initiatives taking place this year. So can you tell us a little about them?
Yes, Kate. There's a lot going on, as we heard from Lee already. In the EU, it's all about the chemical strategy. Interestingly, the strategy itself doesn't have a lot to say about non-animal testing, other than a few boilerplate type statements about ensuring that animal testing is only conducted when there are no other options. But a lot of the major action points have big potential implications for the volume of animal testing. Proposed changes to REACH information requirements to account for endocrine disruption raise the possibility of more animals being used than are currently used. And that's just one example. Another would be registration of polymers. So animal welfare groups are lobbying hard to reduce the impact of those changes and ensure that non-animal tests are more widely used for regulations. They see the chemical strategy as an opportunity to sort of reset the thinking on this topic. That's the background context to any scientific work aimed at EU regulation. Moving on to the science itself, one big initiative that lots of people are excited about is, as you mentioned, the Partnership for the Assessment of Risks from Chemicals, which is shortened to PARC or PARC. And it's very tentatively expected to launch in April or May this year. The partnership is on track to receive 400 million euros in funding, with half coming from the EU and half from member state partners. Now, that's a lot of money, but actually it's split between a lot of different areas. Non-animal testing is just one of those areas, so we'll have to wait and see what comes of that. Meanwhile, we know that regulators have been working together under the APCRA programme. APCRA stands for Accelerating the Pace of Chemical Risk Assessment. The programme is led by Mike Rassenberg at ECHA, Tara Barton-McLaren at Health Canada, and Rusty Thomas at the US EPA. It's not a massively visible programme. You won't find a lot of information about it. But I think it's quite a significant one because it's just for the regulatory scientists with some very targeted input from academia. And then therefore, it takes a very practical approach to the issue and sticks close to what the regulations currently require. One of the things the programme is asking is how might you provide the same level of protection for people and the environment without using animals at all, using just the science we have right now? Could that be done? And obviously, that's not at all straightforward, but the organisers say they're making good progress, and we've previously reported on that progress. We're expecting a public APCRA event at some point in the first half of 2022, but we haven't heard anything concrete yet. Finally, there's important activity at the OECD with its test guidelines programme. Last year saw the approval of a TG on defined approaches to skin sensitisation. A defined approach is a sort of description of what you need to do in order to answer a very specific, a possibly regulatory question using in vitro testing and computer modelling rather than animal testing, which is important because animal testing tends to be much more straightforwardly applicable to regulatory decision making, at least with regulations in their current form. That was the first TG for defined approaches, and it was a huge step forward. This year, another might be adopted by the OECD at its big meeting for the programme in April. The new TG, which is still at the draft stage, is for predicting eye irritation.
Okay, thank you very much, Andrew, for that overview. Another key development this year is the proposal to establish an intergovernmental chemicals panel, which was due for debate at this week's fifth session of the United Nations Environment Assembly. Can you tell us more about the proposal and its significance?
Yes, at the meeting, UN member states adopted a resolution for creating an intergovernmental panel on chemicals, waste and pollution. This is something that has been discussed for a while, particularly under SICEM. The idea is to put chemical pollution as a global issue on the same level as climate change and biodiversity loss, which already have panels of this kind. The IPCC for climate change and the IPBES are usually said as IPBES for biodiversity loss. And the resolution and its adoption is significant because it is expected to fill the knowledge gaps, both in terms of the scale and nature of the problem and in terms of the potential policy responses. The IPCC and IPBES have already charted a path for this kind of panel and shown what can be achieved. The resolution itself indicates the political will, but in the next stage, a lot of details need to be thrashed out. An open-ended working group will be created to facilitate the discussion from here. It will need to set a budget and work out where the money is going to come from. It will also tackle some potentially thorny issues such as industry involvement.
Great. Thank you very much, Andrew, for that update. So that's it for today. So thank you to Lee, David and Andrew for sharing their insights into the key developments for 2022. And thank you to our audience for listening to the Chemical Watch News and Insight podcast. We hope you found it valuable. Now, the Global Outlook series of articles for 2022 can be found at the Chemical Watch website at chemicalwatch.com. And we hope you can join us again next time for the News and Insight podcast. And so until then, goodbye.
Unlock the full value of your compliance and product stewardship with world-leading insight and intelligence from Chemical Watch. To find out more or request a demo, visit chemicalwatch.com. Chemical Watch, intelligence to transform product safety.
The Chemical Watch Podcast.